time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Appreciate you taking time to listen to this podcast. It's a special podcast, and I'm very honored to have joining me in this special podcast, Bill Kilmer. He is the Senior Vice President for Legislative and Political Affairs at the MBA, as well as Pete Mills, Senior Vice President of Residential Policy and Member Engagement. Pete, Bill, thank you so much for taking time out of your extremely busy day to join me on the podcast, on this special podcast today.
Yeah, great. David, happy to do it.
Well, we're glad. We heard you in stereo there. We're glad to have it. I want to share with our listeners, both of you know this, but I want to share with our listeners what really is the reason for this podcast and who was the catalyst for it. I have clients all over the nation, and I get to work with them. It's a real privilege and honor to be speaking to clients and having clients. And we have one client up in Dallas. His name is Bill Shattuck. I'm using his name by permission. He is the owner of Shattuck Companies. He owns title insurance companies. He owns Willow Bend Mortgage. And I was explaining to Bill some of the issues of what's going on. Willow Bend is approved by Fannie Mae, and they sell loans. They're now selling loans into Fannie Mae, but we were explaining to him. Bill is not active in the business. He has Pam Jenkins, who runs the business. So we're explaining to Bill why we're taking some of the actions because of the credit tightening and that's going on. And we're explaining to him and what I didn't realize about how connected Bill is politically. And he explaining what was happening and what some of the issues were. And he says, we need to make some calls. Who do we need to call? And I was explaining various individuals who are in the headlines, all over the headlines right now. He says, well, let me get Roger on. I said, who's Roger? So all of a sudden, Bill disappeared. And if you ever have a phone call with Bill Shattuck, he's one that conferences is in people faster than anybody I have ever met. So sure enough, there's a guy by the name of Roger Williams, just happens to be a U.S. representative. And he goes, Bill, what's going on? And Bill launches into him by saying, Roger, there's some things going on in D.C. right now that is threatening the many mortgage companies. And I own a mortgage company. I've owned this thing for 30 years, and it's threatening what's going on, our liquidity and our ability to operate. And Dave, explain to him what's going on. And then I realized, listeners, oh, my gosh, he's pretty well connected. And so we explained to Roger Williams, Representative Roger Williams, who happens to be a TCU graduate, and Bill Shattuck is. They were fraternity brothers, so they knew each other real well. I mean, Bill literally pulled Roger out of a committee meeting, if I understood correctly, talking about the very thing we're talking about here. So I realized quickly that it is important that we have a coordinated voice, that we have a coordinated message when we're talking on the Hill. I have so much respect for guys like Bill Shattuck that are make-it-happen people. And it's so important that as we make things happen, that we do things in league with and in concert with, synced up with the most important organization that supports our industry. And, of course, I'm talking about the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. And with that, I called out and said, help, Bill Kilmer. I want to make sure what we're doing is in league with you, in step with you, and being effective, most importantly. And then we start talking about doing this special podcast. And that brings us to this podcast. So first of all, Bill, thank you so much for joining. And then thank you for the suggestion getting Pete on this podcast with us to get a couple angles on this. So, Bill, I'd like to toss this over to you. If you could give us an update. Obviously, we're the forbearance issue. We've seen Jenny May have the TPAP. The dog barking got me. That's the world we're living in. We're all working at home, so dogs barking and things going on. Maybe that's appropriate. You may have just had that barking sound because it does feel like barking dogs at the heels of our industry right now, Bill. And what I'm thinking about is, again, Jenny May has the fund for issuers to be able to draw from as we deal with increased extraordinary issues related to forbearance. But there isn't such a fund for Fannie and Freddie. So I know you've been working aggressively on the Hill and working all over, as well as Bob Brooksbent. I should give a big shout-out to Bob Brooksbent, the president and CEO of the NBA, for his tireless work and everyone that's involved in this. So, Bill, bring us up to date, if you would mind. And then as you're explaining it, if we have listeners that are listening that want to get actively involved, and they can, they sure thought you should become an active member of MORPAC, make your donations there. If there was ever a reason, this situation we're dealing with right now underscores that. But also Mortgage Action Alliance. There's ways you can have your voice heard there. But for those of you that are like Bill Shattuck, where you can pick up the phone and drag your friends, your Roger Williams, out of a committee and get talking to him, we need to be synced up. So, Bill, help us get synced up.
Listen, thank you, David, for the to have this conversation with you. And Pete and I will very much tag team this, which is what we're doing. I hear that barking dog in the background all the time. I think that's probably Pete's friend there who's making that noise. And your example of Bill Shattuck and his work with Roger Williams, who's a congressman from Texas, as you mentioned, and a member of the House Financial Services Committee, never been a more important time for us to use those friends and allies in the Congress and those that you have constituent relationships with if you're in the industry to help amplify your voice and to give people an example of what's really happening, the impact of what's happening to the mortgage businesses across the country and the impact that that's having downstream on borrowers, particularly at this time of the unprecedented call for forbearance that came out of the phase three relief package, the CARES Act that just got enacted. And I appreciate the shout out for the Mortgage Action Alliance. And I'm going to say this early and often throughout our conversation today. Mortgage Action Alliance acronym is obviously MAA, and it's free, it's nonpartisan, and it's a way that you can synchronize your message as an individual and easily mobilize, send emails, and get information that's critical throughout this particularly difficult period. You can text those letters, MAA, to the number 50457. That's MAA to the number 50457, or you can go to mba.org/MAA, and you can join very easily with just a couple of keystrokes, and we'll keep you informed. And we have been sending out a number of calls to action on issues related to the Congress and to the federal government in Washington, D.C., for congressmen and women and senators to contact key members of the administration or to take action on specific pieces of legislation, but also in state capitals around the country as keeping, you know, housing-related services listed as essential services in this time and making a push for remote online notarization and things of that sort, never been more important. And I would also say, David, thank you so much for the shout out to MORPAC, our industry's political action committee. You can get there off mba.org, but you can also just Google MORPAC, M-O-R-P-A-C, and that'll take you straight to the page that'll give you a chance to contribute. It's the fuel that helps us keep staying in front of members of Congress, even at a difficult economic time like we're going through. And, you know, David, you framed the push that we've been making with respect to these forbearance requirements that were part of the CARES Act. The GSEs, FHFA, and their regulator, Mark Calabria, took the lead in putting together a regime for how the forbearance should flow. And then the Congress essentially codified that guidance, not exactly verbatim word for word, but much more in the spirit of that. It was a little bit different approach, and we were able to use folks from around the country and the staff at MBA, Pete's team, my team, to work with members of Congress so that those two frameworks were more in sync than they would have been before the Senate passed the legislation, and obviously the House followed suit. The bill has been signed into law since late March, and we've been off to the races ever since. But I think that it might be good to toss things to Pete to talk a little bit about how that's been operationalized, and also kind of talk about three or four of the other main pillars of our outreach on behalf of the industry, if that's all right, David.
Perfect. Absolutely. Pete, go for it.
Yeah, good. Thanks, Bill, and thanks, David. So let me walk through. There's a whole body of issues we've been working on since the crisis began, and they really fall into four buckets, and starting with the issue that Bill's been talking about, the CARES Act and the forbearance requirements that are embodied in the CARES Act as well as in the GSE and FHA and VA forbearance standards. So there's a whole body of work in the servicing space, a number of issues in the originations, and then two other buckets are really the liquidity issue, which is driven by the servicing forbearance. And then Bill made a reference to the state issues that we're dealing with, the shelter in place orders and things like that. So let's start with the servicing and forbearance issues. Bill mentioned, you know, the CARES Act requires a 6-month forbearance, up to 6 months initial forbearance, and up to an additional 6 months. Those are largely what I call friction-free requirements. There is little documentation required other than an attestation or an assertion by the borrower that they are experiencing a COVID-related hardship. The operational aspects of servicing sort of dictate that a documentation-heavy paper chase would bury servicers in a matter of days, given the volume of forbearance we've seen. So that's part of the challenge that we're dealing with. And so a variety of issues come out of that. Obviously, there are advancing issues that arise out of that. If you're a servicer for FHA or VA, you're advancing PITI for anywhere from 120 days, and then Fannie Mae has a longer period of time before those advances are returned. The Ginnie Mae advances obviously persist much longer. And so immediately we recognize the need for a liquidity facility to help servicers with the what is really an unprecedented level of advances. We are tracking those on a weekly basis. We've gone from a very, very low level of delinquencies and low level of active forbearances to we will blow through the 5% level this week. And estimates of total forbearance take up under the CARES Act is going to be between 15%, possibly higher, depending upon how long this persists. So this creates a major liquidity challenge for the industry, particularly for the independent mortgage banker. But it is not just an IMB issue. There are community banks that are being asked to forbear on other consumer debt, as well as small business loans. And so the need for a liquidity facility really has come down into two significant areas. One is with Ginnie Mae. And I have to say that Ginnie Mae has been incredibly responsive to the challenges ahead of them, looking at their existing authorities and using them in creative ways without having to go to Congress to stand up what we call the PTAP, the Pass-Through Assistance Program. It was based on a prior program they had for hurricanes and other natural disasters. That is now been stood up in a matter of a few weeks. It is operational. It was for the April 20 remittance cycle for Ginnie Mae securities, and it does cover principal and interest advances for issuers. Still creates a need for liquidity support for taxes and insurance, and then you've got obviously need for liquidity support to support your advances on GSE securities. We are looking now to the Fed, and I'm going to have Bill talk a little bit about where that discussion stands. The Fed has ample authority under its 13.3, what we call Section 13.3 authorities, to stand up a liquidity facility. Congress provided in the CARES Act over $450 billion to do so. But we have to move them politically, create the political will for them to stand up a facility specifically for servicing advances. On the origination front, we are dealing with a whole number of issues that are just what I would call friction in the system, created by the fact that we're dealing with social distancing, we're dealing with the inability of appraisers to get in and see a property. And so we have been engaged in regular calls with the GSEs, with FHA, with VA, to try to develop the kinds of flexibilities needed to keep transactions moving in this incredibly unusual environment. So appraisal flexibilities, verification flexibilities. There is a significant issue we're working on currently related to what we're calling early payment forbearance, which is when a borrower seeks forbearance after closing and prior to delivery. And we're trying to ensure that those loans are, in fact, purchasable by the GSEs. And that is creating that the uncertainty there is creating significant issues back through the system. And then the last body of issues are the state issues, the shelter in place or stay at home orders that are coming out. We have been working with our state mortgage bankers associations to ensure that not only our financial services, which are already identified as essential services by most states and by the Department of Homeland Security, but also all the ancillary services that support the real estate finance transaction are deemed to be essential services under those orders. And that's been a significant challenge There's a major battle right now in the state of Pennsylvania, which has gone overboard on its designation of what's essential and what's not, and a lot of work being done there. The states are also moving on the forbearance front as well, and our efforts are really to try to get those states to align with the federal status so that we have a uniform body of forbearance out there. So those are the four buckets of issues we're working on. I will just say two other things. We do a weekly call with our members. We get over 1,000 people calling in. In fact, we max out our call-in lines and we record these, but we do a one-hour call, 2:00 on Mondays for members, where we walk through all of the existing work streams that were going on and gives folks a good level set at the top of the week of accomplishments of the prior week and new issues that have come up that we're tackling. So a great way to stay in touch. And then I'm going to let Bill talk a little bit about some of the things that they're working on at Capitol Hill. But I would also note that if you sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance, there's a very comprehensive weekly Mortgage Action Alliance newsletter that goes out that will cover all these same issues and allow folks to stay completely up to speed on what we're working on their behalf.
There's also an app where we're jumping on the MAW Mortgage Action Alliance deal. There's an app that everyone can download. It's so effective, and encourage people to download. Go to your app store your Android device. I'm an Apple guy, so go wherever you need to go on your Android device. Bill, fighting so many battles. Pete, thanks so much for lining those up. Four pillars. Have there ever been a time, Pete, where you've been busier? These are such four critical ones. The state, what's going on in Pennsylvania? I'm just hearing stories out of there. Michigan's not too far behind. 10,000 people show up protesting in Michigan about the overtaking the whole, social distancing thing too far. So it's so many battles and so many fronts. I applaud all of you, what you're doing. If you have a chance to get to your representative, what are the words we need to be saying? But first of all, follow on with what Pete said. Get some clarity.
Sure. No, absolutely. But Pete was talking about some of the things that we were doing on the Hill, and particularly I think as pertains to the need for this liquidity so that investors can continue to be paid when payments aren't missed, and understandably so, but so that servicers can be the implementers of this forbearance regime. And I've been really heartened by the fact that this issue and the need for the liquidity really has not been a partisan one. Obviously, what the Treasury is doing, what the Federal Reserve is doing is unprecedented. It makes what happened in 2008 and 2009 already look small by comparison, which I don't know that any of us thought we'd ever see, at least in our lifetimes. And this is just, different cause. Obviously, this public health and safety problem is one that's really unprecedented. And so there's many things that they've had to stand up in record time that were authorities they were given when the CARES Act was passed. But there's over $450 billion, which doesn't seem as large a sum as it did perhaps a month or two ago, but is a serious chunk of money in what's called an emergency stabilization fund in one section of the bill, which is the backstop for the Fed to use the so-called 13-3 authorities that Pete alluded to. Yep. And you've seen them do that in different sectors of the economy. What I've been heartened by, and the MBA team's been happy to see, is that both Republicans and Democrats have written to Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and to Fed Chairman Powell, or written to them individually and said, we're watching carefully as you implement the authorities you were given in the CARES Act. We want you to take special heed of certain sectors, such as mortgage servicing. And, there have been letters that have come from the Senate Banking Committee Chairman, Republican Mike Crapo, strong conservative from Idaho. Yep. Same kind of letters written by progressives like Maxine Waters, who's the chairwoman of the House Financial Services Committee from California, Democrat. Her counterpart on the banking committee, Crapo's ranking member, Sherrod Brown, a Democrat from Ohio. And then you had a group of almost 25 Republicans that sent a letter to both Justice Secretary Mnuchin saying that there was a critical need to stand up a facility or give access to mortgage servicers to a facility within this authority that's in the CARES Act. Even if there was never a need to use it, have the tool available and send a signal that you're going to do that. And so you've got all four quadrants, House and Senate, Republican and Democrat, of leaders in the Congress suggesting that liquidity needs to be made available and operational. And obviously, Pete and his team, Bob Brookschmidt and others at NBA are talking regularly with folks at HUD, spent a ton of time talking to the folks at Ginnie Mae. They have taken the steps that they have, but we're in fairly constant contact. Our colleague Mike Frattantoni with his contacts at the Federal Reserve. Mike's our chief economist, as you know, David, talking almost daily with the Fed, sharing information and data and talking about the need for this facility. The same thing true with the team at the Treasury Department. And so we continue to press that case. That's one message that I know Pete and I would love for folks to be able to their members of Congress, just as I'm sure Bill Shattuck did, some of the specific issues that Pete's touched on, but also this liquidity issue writ large. Just send a signal that you're going to set up the facility. We recognize that the timing, you know, may take a little bit longer, but the markets really need to know that help is going to be there for the folks that need to have the liquidity steps taken. And, you know, obviously we'll continue to be a resource. And I suspect that as we're getting ready for this next big relief package that the Congress is going to get to, I'll talk to you in a minute, David, about some of the politics that have slowed down replenishing some of the funds for all business-related relief and how that will play into this next big relief package. But as Congress is getting ready for that, you know, we're putting together a list of things that we think Congress needs to act on for the industry, including some technical corrections on forbearance and some other critical measures for both the single-family side of the House and our multifamily members. And we're going to be using that MOP platform shortly, asking people to weigh in to take that message forward. But let me stop there and let you ask a few questions of us.
Well, we always know that the feds are the source or the borrowing source of least desire. I can't remember how they phrased it. I've heard it. But is 13.1 considered a loan? Is that what would be the MBA's hoping to get something through Congress and that we don't need to use the Emergency Stabilization Fund? I think I got that right. 13.3. I wrote that one down. $450 billion. Are we hoping to not need that, or is this in conjunction with? If you could add some clarity to that.
I think it's in conjunction with. We certainly wouldn't forestall the opportunity for Congress to take specific action and legislatively mandate that there be a facility for mortgage servicers. What we found in the last round, in the phase three round, the CARES Act round of legislating, again, in this weird remote environment where the Congress was generally not there, leaders were negotiating, and then they were brought back into town for the voting, is that the Fed and the Treasury Department frown on any specific legislative authority for any specific sector of the economy in altering the statutory framework around this 13.3 credit facility authority that the Fed has. So would we accept that? Would we ask for Congress to push? Yes, but we also are simultaneously pushing for them to use the authority that was given to them in the CARES Act. And Pete, you may want to talk a little bit about, you know, how the loan advances might be used as collateral and how that facility would be operationalized and how, you know, our members could potentially utilize it.
Yeah. So, David, to your point, it is something that you would rather have and not need than to need and not have.
Right.
And so that's we've been really pressuring them to begin work on this, because if forbearance persists longer, if it takes longer for the economy to reopen, we are going to need this, and you can't stand this up after you've realized you have a need for it. It'll be too late.
Yeah.
So we are really pushing hard for this to begin this work now. The framework, there's a variety of different ways you could go, and a 13.3 facility is a borrowing facility. So the entity that goes to the window is going to pledge collateral. In this case, the collateral would be servicing advances that we are making really on behalf of Fannie, Freddie, and potentially the T&I portion of Ginnie Mae. These are all reimbursable advances. They are dollar good out of the waterfall, whether it's at the end of the forbearance period when the GSEs reimburses for the advances. Hopefully not too much of this, but if property goes into foreclosure in the Ginnie context, you would get your reimbursements at that point in time, or you get them through a partial claim through FHA. But they are receivables that are the property of the servicer, that are a good asset that can be pledged to the Fed to get cash back, to get the liquidity back. And so a variety of ways you could tap that. One would be have the individual IMBs go to the Fed, to the Fed facility. I'm thinking the Fed probably doesn't want to have 400 or 500 people coming to the door.
Yeah.
So alternatives, you could work it through warehouse lenders, or you could work it through the GSEs themselves. This was effectively a GSE version of the PTAP program, where the GSEs are the ones going to the window to reimburse the servicers for the advances they're making on behalf of the GSEs. So again, a variety of different options. We have sketched out all three of those, but it's important that they begin to think through these mechanics in a way that can
and get quickly.
Something set up very quickly. So.
Yeah, very clear. And it's so knowing that the Federal Reserve is the lender of least resort or least desired of all of them.
Lender of last resort, I think.
Lender of last resort. There we go. That's what I was looking for. And there's reasons for that. Are there any other provisions or any other concerns by running through that door and having granted funds that we should be aware of that we should say use caution and so I guess what I'm thinking is 13.3 sometimes somewhat like the stay at home. If the cure is worse than the disease, is any words of caution there, or should we encourage our listeners to explore that?
I think it does require what they call a penalty interest rate. Now, how stiff that penalty is, it's an above market rate, but this is a short term facility. It's not a long term facility. These advances most of them get paid when loans are bought out of pools by the GSEs. The partial claim process at FHA. So it is a short-term facility. So the penalty rate would not be extreme. I mean, there's always caution when you're borrowing from the federal government. People should do it eyes open and only do it if they need it. I mean, it's funny. We talk about it, same way we talk about borrowers should not take forbearance unless they actually need it. Would encourage folks only to tap these liquidity facilities, whether it's the PTAP, or hopefully we'll get a Fed liquidity stood up. I would only recommend that you tap it if you need it. If the forbearance period is shorter, if fewer people take up forbearance and you have liquidity to fund the advances, I would absolutely suggest doing that. But if the take-up rates are high, if the duration is long, and you need the facility to meet your advance obligations, then it's there for you.
Good. I think it's so important. It's there, but proceed with caution is probably what I'm hearing between the lines on that. Use other sources. And that's like what Bill Shattuck was doing. He's calling all these other resources that he could use and call upon, but it's nice to know that one's there. So let's move into, by the way, I just got a text message from Roger Williams. So I don't know if it's coincidental or he's listening in, but thank you to all the congressmen that we do have. This podcast does get listened to a lot on the Hill, and we're grateful for all that you're doing to listen to these two gentlemen. Bill Kilmer is known by all of you there, so please make sure you're hearing and listening to what he has to say. I couldn't believe that. I just got a text message from Roger Williams. But anyway, let's get talking about the pending. Oh, one question. I'm looking at some text messages that came in from listeners right now. One that came in is, Pete, you said they're standing up the $450 billion. That is not 13.3, $450 billion is not available at this moment, yes or no? And if not, when will it be available?
Funding for a 13.3 facility. 13.3 is just the section of the Federal Reserve Act under which the liquidity facilities are permitted. The funding is available. The Treasury has $454 billion, I think, is the number that Bill mentioned. That's available. They have not used it all up yet.
So it is available. Okay, good.
It's authorized. They've used about a third of that tranche of money.
Okay.
And, you know, the way that works under the Federal Reserve Act is that it's a leveraged approach. So you really can lend almost 10x beyond the amount of money that's there as the backstop. So there is adequate funding. And this is a point that Senate Banking Committee Chairman Crapo made in his last letter to the Fed and the Treasury. There's ample funding left from that $450 billion amount.
Okay.
That could be utilized just to provide that kind of facility for mortgage servicing.
Is the MBA providing any guidance or advice when accessing that facility? Are you guys a resource that they should turn to? Or if not, who would they turn to as a resource to access 13.3?
Well, again, I want to emphasize, and then I'll turn it back to Pete, that the funding's there, the authority's there, the Fed has, and the Treasury in concert, the Fed has established several, virtually half a dozen various credit facilities for different sectors of the economy. They have not yet done this for the mortgage servicing.
Okay, there's
the
clarity.
Side of the economy. That's the ask that we need to continue to be making of folks like Congressman Williams and the others, to continue to push the Treasury and continue to push the Fed to do that. And they have not said not yet. They have not said no. They have said not yet. And, you know, Secretary Mnuchin's been in the press even earlier this week talking about a careful eye that they're continuing to keep on the mortgage servicing space, you know, and working with other regulators in that regard. Fed Chairman Powell did a press conference last week, David, where he talked in a little bit more detail than Mnuchin about some of the focus that the Fed is keeping, no doubt because of some of the information that we're sharing. So Pete and I are, along with the rest of the MBA team, waiting for the opportunity to be a resource to give guidance to folks listening to your podcast about how they will utilize this facility. But it has not yet been stood up yet, although the authority exists and the funding exists for it to be done.
Okay, good.
Now,
that gives the clarity.
On the Ginnie side, the PTAP is up and running and is available for folks to use. And I would suggest talk to your Ginnie account exec. There is a process set up in this new section of the Ginnie guides that they have put in place for this particular emergency or disaster, if you will. And there is a process. There's a few forms to fill out. There's a couple of attestations. And there is a time frame. So if you need help for the May remittance cycle, you would need to be talking to Ginnie Mae early in the month. I believe on the 5th and the 6th is when they review requests for funding from the PTAP facility. And then they will review those requests and then arrange for, if approved, arrange for depositing into the servicer's P&I account the funding necessary to make what would be the May remittance on May 20th. So there is a very specific process. It's outlined in the All Participants Memorandum and in Chapter 30 of the Ginnie Guide. So I would definitely encourage folks to look there.
I just got a text message in. I wouldn't be very surprised. This is Bill Shattuck texting me right now. It says, who do we call at the feds to make sure to help move that along? There's a lot of people that have, they're wanting to get behind that. Bill, who should we be contacting there?
I actually would encourage people, if they've got contacts, to be pushing those towards the Treasury. And not to get into the alphabet soup that is Washington, David, but the Dodd-Frank Act established a multi-regulator council that was supposed to look at systemic risk-related questions throughout the economy to try to avoid problems that were brought about by that last great recession crisis called the FSOC, the Financial Stability Oversight Council. It's chaired by the Treasury Secretary. The Fed sits on it, the OCC, the FDIC, FHFA, the whole alphabet soup of folks in the prudential financial regulatory space. And FSOC has stood up a task force at Treasury Mnuchin's urging or direction to look at this mortgage servicing equation, particularly with respect to non-banks. And they've had a meeting. Pete and others from MBA, Bob Brookschmidt, have been in regular contact with FSOC. And so if you're talking to folks inside the administration, I think the effort should be directed towards Secretary Mnuchin's team. We'd be happy to talk with folks about who they might want to, you know, direct their questions. But, you know, the secretary is playing a leading role. He's been the lead negotiator for the president on Capitol Hill and on all of these relief efforts. And he's at the core of the implementation. We think the Fed is probably in a place where, you know, if given the right political go-ahead, that they want to be able to utilize this authority. We haven't given up the ghost on that or taken that for granted. Any of the individual Fed governors, and again, this is outside of the way that we lobby legislators, this is some of the inside baseball of having some of those relationships that some on your podcast here will undoubtedly have with some of the lead policymakers. But, you know, certainly Chairman Powell or any of the other Federal Reserve governors are folks to be contacted. I'd point to Randy Quarles, who's the vice chairman of the Fed and really has the lead on regulatory matters as another important touchstone. But I'd circle back to saying the Treasury is probably the most important place to train your fire.
Well, we will. Listeners, write that down. Let's move forward and talk about what you're doing this next round of funding. What are you hoping to accomplish, and how hopeful are you?
Pete can certainly jump in here as well. There's a whole host of things that, you know, we've been polling our members on as we've been getting these operational details and continue to look at the data that Mike Frattantoni's team is providing. You know, in the rush to get the Senate bill in particular passed and then the House passing it a couple of days later, there are going to be technical mistakes in a package yep. that's over $2 trillion worth of authorities. There was a mistake and language was left out of defining the covered period of time for the utilization of this forbearance regime that we've been discussing, the 6 months initially and then up to an additional 6 months. And so we're working to try to get that technical language inserted so that there is a definition for the covered period of that mandate to, for the forbearance. Pete talked about this issue relative to early payment forbearance and the GSEs purchasing loans from lenders when the borrower has indicated the need for forbearance. That's something that we're working on administratively, but something that we're certainly talking to the Congress about. And then talking about making sure that Ginnie's got adequate authority, or if there's a need for them to have additional authorities beyond the PTAP facility that they've stood up under their existing authority. And we talked a little bit, David, about, you know, continuing to work both tracks and see if the Congress is open to a specified mortgage servicer facility for the Fed, or whether that, you know, they can continue to just pressure the Treasury and the Fed to do it under existing authority. Pete, I may want to jump in here and underscore some of what I just threw out there, but that's what we've been doing in terms of getting ready as we are lobbying on an individual basis, offices up on Capitol Hill and key leaders, you know, in this next debate. You know, we're getting ready to turn to the Mortgage Action Alliance and go down that laundry list and ask people to weigh in. But Pete, if you've got anything to add to what I gave is the shopping list.
Yeah, those are the key items. I think in anything like this, always playing a little bit of defense as well. And so a little bit of concern about efforts to perhaps expand or change the CARES Act forbearance framework. And so one of the worst things we could do is create new requirements in addition to those we're already executing to. You know, one of the things we learned in 2008, 9, and 10, is, particularly with the HAMP program, is don't change the rules in the middle of the program. And so we've got the CARES Act, we've got the GSEs and the FHA and the other agency forbearance standards. We're executing to those. We don't want those changed in the middle of the road with either additional disclosures or other requirements that would require operational changes. The scale of forbearance that we're dealing with is unprecedented, particularly coming off of record low delinquencies to what will now be a significant increase in forbearance and in delinquencies. Don't change the rules in the middle of the game. So we'll be playing some defense yep. on that front as well.
David, I would say lots of our members have been urging us to try to nail down a little bit more well-defined causation hook for people that would need the forbearance because of a COVID-19 related reason. And as Pete said, we are, you know, pushing against the headwind. Republicans, Democrats, the administration have all rallied behind the need for this forbearance. The industry has as well. We'd love to tighten up some of those standards, but like Pete said, it's going to be incredibly difficult to do so. We're worried about playing defense, you know, for other requirements that might be layered on, just as he said.
The text messages are blowing up. I can only imagine how many people are running at you with messages as you're trying to do what you're doing on the Hill. Let's talk about the probability of the timing of this. Bill, is something, do you anticipate something happening? Or Pete, whichever, I mean, I know you both are active on this, so it really goes to both of you. What is the timing? Let's start with you, Bill.
Well, timing for the next round of legislation, I would have said, would have been late this month. David, I know Pete and I feel like days seem like weeks and the weeks seem like months. It seems like an
that's
eternity
so true.
Since we weren't sheltering in place. And just given the volume of work crossing everyone's desk, and I know that's true for everyone in the industry as well. But I now would say it's going to be May, and I would even say late May for this next legislative package. One of the small business props, the so-called Paycheck Protection Program, which was funded at $350 billion, is already out of money. And I know some of the industry have seen whether they can apply for that, you know, as a resource during these troubling times. You know, the funding's gone, and yet you can't get a bipartisan consensus just to gross that program up and put another $250 billion, you know, as a backstop for that. Democrats are suggesting that they also want to get some direct funding out to hospitals and to state and local governments directly to build on some of the elements of the CARES Act. And so that slowed down Congress trying to do all this without members in town and doing it at the leadership level just by unanimous consent is proving difficult. So they're not coming back to Washington until May the 4th, absent some emergency. And I would say your listeners should think of that as some, you know, major market decline again of the sort that we saw right in the middle of the passage of the CARES Act on the equity side might be a catalyst. But I don't think they're coming back until May because, to be quite honest, they don't want to spend all the time around each other on Moss, you know, with several hundred of them around in either chamber. So that's the timing on the legislative side. Pete and I speculate daily about what might happen with respect to, you know, this mortgage servicing authority. But, Pete, you want to jump in here?
On the regulatory side, which is where I spend more of my time, it's just it's a constant push of working with other allied industry groups. I would say, I don't think Bill mentioned this earlier, this Fed facility is really important for IMBs, but community banks and others support it. So we work with other industry allies to continue to push Treasury towards standing up this facility. So we've had realtor support, we've had home builder support, and we've had community banker support. So there's a lot of effort.
MI industry is supportive as well.
Good. Exactly.
Structured finance folks, the investor side.
Yep.
Good.
Yeah. So a lot of our efforts are building the coalition as well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the MAW app, because you talked about this coming week, you're going to be pushing a lot out through that app. And I like something Bill Shattuck wrote a quote to me when he wrote me an email about all that. He knows Roger Williams, Van Taylor, Ann Wagner, and even Maxine Waters. He's in contact with all of them. And he says, you know, this one quote, he says, it comes out of the Army. He says, I'm only one, but I am one. And I think it's so important that you listeners see yourself as one when you use the MAW app, when you log into that. And you have that open all the time. It's a way to have your voice heard. And if you're one like Bill Shattuck, who has access to the top people across there, you may not have access to as many as Bill has, but you have talking points right there. Have them down. Be able to talk to them. Take this podcast and forward it on to them. Hear the tone here. What's so impressive when I was talking to Bill and Pete, they're not as much about pointing fingers at any one person. And there's been a lot of finger pointing at one particular individual, Mark Calabria, and they're wanting to do what's right. They want to get a message away in a healthy, positive way. Nobody knows how to manage the troubled waters ahead better than these two. So let's follow their lead, listeners. Let's work with the MAW app. So talk, Bill, Pete, about what we can anticipate and how to react with what you're putting up there.
Sure, absolutely. What you can anticipate is this continued drumbeat on the need for liquidity within the four corners of how Pete and I have tried to explain what we're advancing in these daily conversations and with our coalition partners as well. And I would also say we've had some of the consumer advocates, you know, on behalf of the borrower who have also weighed in heavily, you know, for the need for this liquidity facility to be operationalized as well. So it's basically the ask that set of asks that I was going through, Dave, in response to your questions, your question about what's next on the legislative front. That's
right.
That's what I anticipate us pushing out through the app. And I appreciate you making the case for the app on someone's smartphone, regardless of platform, whether it's Google, Android or Apple iPhone. Just type in whatever your app store equivalent is, Mortgage Action Alliance. It'll take you right to the app. It's as simple as any of these other apps that we use in our daily lives or use when we were all going to restaurants or still using now when we're doing takeout, you know, at Chick-fil-A or McDonald's, same kind of principle.
Yep.
You can walk through two easy steps that will allow you to join the Alliance and you'll get all that information that both Pete and I have referenced. I'll also say we try to make it as easy as possible for people to join. And that's why I told you I'd repeat that if you want to just send a text message, text the letters MAA for MA to 50457, and it'll shoot you back a link, and you can walk through just as easily, become a member, and you'll start getting all this information pushed out to email, but you can get all this information right at your fingertips through the app. And that's what I would tell folks to anticipate. It's just a reiteration of what we're going to be asking the Hill and the talking points of the company, the things that Pete and I have tried to synthesize for you today.
One thing that I just got another text, do I have to be a member of the MBA? And I know that answer. The answer is no. And I applaud you guys for whoever set this up. You do not have to be a member of the MBA to have your voice heard with that.
I would be remiss if I didn't say, but why not?
Say what?
Why not join?
Why not join? Exactly.
Say why not join?
You should. Exactly. We should say that. Well, Tricia Magliazzo is going to be hearing this, and if we don't say that, I'm going to be taking some punishment from her for sure. She works
exactly.
with you, Pete, and I'm looking at those that have been pushing back on membership at the NBA. I mean, this is why we need membership. You need to be a member, and then you need to do what Bill Cosgrove did. He caught me at the last MORPAC meeting. There feeling no pay, no what he was drinking, and he got $1,000 out of me for that, and another $1,000 out of me. And I think it's so important, and I felt so good when I did it. It was a pressure moment, and we did it, but I thought about that, and I go, we need to be giving more. This has never been a more important time to be pouring into our MORPAC fund and then having our voice heard. It's a 1-2 punch that you've got to do. And what Bill Shattuck said, that Army saying, I'm only one, but I am one. And that's a great phrase when you're considering MORPAC.
No, thank you, David, and thank you for your contributions over the years. And thank you for that anecdote. And I would just underscore, you know, we're your constituents by proxy. This is an incredibly crazy time with a lot of critical debate that's taking place. And, you know, the MORPAC, it's the political capital that we utilize to make sure that we're in front of the people that can help, you know, impact these debates positively on the industry's behalf. So thank you for the underscoring that message. And thank you to folks for continuing to dig deep or participate fully, whether through MA or MORPAC at this particular point in time.
I've got several. Is there a one-page document that you have that we can post on our website, the show notes, or that people can access at the MBA website that have the talking points? There's such a dynamic issue. You'd be just constantly updating that. But is there a resource that we can go to, Pete and Bill?
The answer is yes. I think you nailed it, David, by saying that it's constantly evolving and we're tweaking it on sometimes an hourly but daily basis. But we'll Pete and I will put our heads together, and we'll get you something that you can post there, and then we'll point people to the right place. The MA platform is certainly one of those places. We've done that kind of by separating some of the discrete issues out from the main issue, but certainly on the liquidity front, we can get something pulled together for you and make sure you get that posted.
Yeah, and we do have a page on our website that is a resource page for everything that's coming out from agencies and from states, from the GSEs. It is a pretty vast collection of source documents and some of our own work. We also have what we call a community page that you can access from the main resource page, where we post things on a regular basis. We allow folks to, if you're a member, you can be on the community and you can post questions you might have that you've run into in a particular state or a particular locality. Hey, we're having trouble with the Santa Clara County Recorder's Office. Anybody know what's going on there? And it's a way for people to communicate not only to us, we monitor it, but they can communicate with each other.
State and local,
it's very, very COVID-specific, tailored information as a resource.
Yeah.
Good.
And I will say, David, I know you're getting a lot of texts and the like, and Bill and I and my whole team, our whole teams are getting texts and emails from, oh, do you know about this issue? Do you know about that issue? If we can't respond to everyone, don't take that as a sign that we're not we're not responding. Our members have been an incredible resource for us to identify. So all those flexibilities we talked about with appraisals, with verifications of employment, all that stuff came from members who saying, hey, you know, in this new world, we can't do transactions the way we used to. Can we get some flexibility for this, for that, for the other thing? It all goes into our sort of daily body of work. And so if you don't get a specific personalized response, it doesn't mean we didn't log the issue in and that we're not working on it.
You know, everybody in the NBA team is doing their best. And I'll take this all the way up to Bob Brookschmidt, our CEO, to respond to those emails. It may take us a little longer time than it normally would, but what we're hearing from people in the field, to underscore Pete's point, what you guys are seeing on a daily basis and the needs out there, getting that, you know, real-time information is helping us do a better job of making our case as we articulate it here in D.C. and are pushing that out to state capitals.
Someone just wrote me, you're going to get a chuckle out of this text. It says, oh, duh, use ma. So they're trying to play on the words there. But anyway, oh, duh, use ma. So, yeah, I agree with that. I don't know who that text, that cell phone number came from. I have to call them and give them a shout out, but that's good.
Yeah, I love it.
You guys are doing yeoman's work there all the way through the whole MBA. Thank you so much for taking an hour out of your busy day today to sit here and get on and talk to our listeners. And listeners, take this podcast and share it everywhere. We've got to get this out. And the most important part is use MAW. Second most important part, support MORPAC and be a member of the MBA. So, okay, Tricia, hopefully got me off the hook of that one. But anyway, Tricia Migliazzo, head of membership at the MBA. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We've had as our special guests on the podcast today, this special podcast. We've had Bill Kelmer, Senior Vice President of Legislative and Political Affairs, as well as Pete Mills, Senior Vice President of Residential Policy and Member Engagement. Gentlemen, thank you so much. And again, kudos for the yeoman's work that you are all doing there at the MBA. Appreciate you all.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
You bet. Have a great week, everybody. Next week, we have Gwen Buse coming on, my dear friend. I'm so excited to talking to Gwen. She's going to be on our guest on Monday's podcast, so don't miss Monday's podcast. And then we're also going to hopefully be lining up some other special podcasts as we go through this. Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.